It's October, which means it's time. 31 days, 31 podcasts.
31 days, 31 podcasts.
31 podcasts. It's Helpful Show and Podo.
Hey everybody, I just got to the curve everyone will know quite well if you've been in Denver, where it's like shortly after I-70 joins I-25, and it takes this big curve kind of by a bunch of car dealerships and shit, and it just, for some reason, the traffic stops here. This is where we all just stop and smell the roses. Today, we're going to do a little book versus movie. Stephen King's It. And we're going to talk about the new movie. I mean, the old movie is fine. I think the old movie is only scary if you're scared of clowns. Let's be honest. And I'm not scared of clowns and never really was. So there you go. But we're going to talk about the new movie because it was quite roundly beloved. And Pete is going to take the spooky position of it wasn't that great, to be honest. And like, the book is much better. Now, I know that's not an unusual position to take. The book was better than the movie, right? Not super original. But I think I have some difference of opinion on book versus movie and all that shit. We'll get into it. Don't worry. So here's the deal. Spoilers for both, of course, because this is impossible otherwise. So if you want to do both the book and the movie and you haven't, I don't know. I don't know what order I'd suggest. I guess I would do the book first and then the movie, because that's what I did, and I had a really good experience with the book and mediocre with the movie. But maybe it's better if it's a movie first and then you do the book? I don't fucking know. I can't tell you, because I didn't do that. All right. So let's just go through this. Here's like the core difference, I think, between the book and the movie. The book goes alternating sections where you've got all the main characters, the Losers Club, the kids, and their kids. You know, they're like, I don't know, 12, 13 probably. And they're in the 50s. And then you'll have a section where that's going on. Then you'll have a section after that where they're adults in the 80s and they've met back up. Because kind of the whole premise here is there's this evil in the town of Derry. D-E-R-R-Y. We ain't got no alibi. We haunted. Yeah, yeah. There's an evil force there that takes the form of Pennywise the clown. And they kind of discover this as kids and then confront it. And then they make a pact because they're like not sure if it's all the way dead. And they're like, if it's not all the way dead, we all have to make a pact that we're going to come back. And I don't, it's like 27 years or something. We'll all come back and fight it again, you know, and defeat it this time for real when we're adults and whatever, you know, but we can't forget. We have to remember and we have to do all this shit. So the reason that works really well, if you ask me, is because so all the kids have their own encounters with Pennywise, and Pennywise appears to them as basically whatever is scary to them. You know, so Stan, who's a hypochondriac, it's like a leper with, like, his face is falling apart and, like, all this shit, right? And, you know, Bill, it appears, like, is sort of his younger brother or killing his younger brother and shit like that. Basically, it's like, you know, it's a teenage werewolf for someone else because they just saw the movie, Mummy to somebody else, all this. Basically, anything that's scary to them, it shows up as that, right? So, what's effective about the way the book is laid out is that they confront Pennywise at the end, and you're at the end of the book both when they're confronting it as kids and as adults. And part of what I think the movie is going to end up doing is having... So, the end of the first movie has them confront him as kids. And then I assume the end of the second movie will be them finishing him off as adults, right? But part of what worked about the first movie, or about the book, I'm sorry, is that you have both confrontations happening at the end of the book. And I kind of think if it had been in order, you know, I'm a big non-fan of both movies and books that, like, switch up the chronology of events, basically because it's like, I don't think this would be a really interesting story if you told it in order, right? But I think that what works about this, he's not really fucking with the chronology. He's just telling these two stories sort of simultaneously. And what works about it is then you have your two confrontations happening at the same time for the reader, right? Like, I'm reading it and they're confronting Pennywise as kids, and I'm also reading where they're confronting Pennywise as adults. So you're not, like, revealing all the Pennywise shit. You're not kind of explaining everything until the end. So what I feel like is going to happen in the books a little bit, or the movie, Jesus Christ, I can't even think. I'm very hungry right now. I don't know if that's affecting my brain. In the movie, the first movie ends with them confronting Pennywise and whatever, right? And then they make the pact. And so one assumes that the movie part two is mostly going to be them getting back together and finishing off Pennywise. And I feel like that's going to just feel like the same movie again, but they're adults. You know, where, like, the book, I think if it had been in totally in order, would have felt like that. I think it would have felt like a book and then a second book that's kind of a sequel tacked on to the end. Like, you just stapled two completely different books together. But it works. The way it works in the book totally works, and I'm not convinced that it's going to work in the movie. All right. Let's talk about some of the other differences, and, you know, whether it favors the book or the movie, right? Okay, one of the differences was, I feel like all of the kids and adults, but, you know, let's talk about the kids, because that's really all the movie got to, right? I feel like all the kids got a pretty good shake in the book. Like, you got to know all of the kids pretty well. You got to know some of their parents pretty well. I mean, there was a lot of that shit going on, right? And in the movie, that definitely didn't happen. Jewish kid Stan was totally off to the side, right? Just fucking, I don't know. It was like he was barely there. Would the movie have been any different without Stan? No, I don't think so. You could have definitely combined Richie and Eddie into one kid, I think. I mean, Mike, the black kid, Jesus Christ. I mean, he had a lot to do in the book, and he had a lot of interesting stuff, and he's like the last kid to join their friend group, right? And so it makes sense, because in the movie, that whole thing is very rushed. Like, the friend group is pretty much formed, and then Mike joins, and they're just kind of like, hey, you should be friends with us, and he's like, okay. But in the book, it felt a lot more realistic. Like, it's a little slower. It's not immediately like they're all friends, and it just kind of happens. And there's this element in the book that's, you know, laid out, but also subtle throughout the entire book, but that there's an element of fate going on here, right? You've got this ancient evil, and it draws these kids together in order to fight it, basically. Or some force draws these kids together to fight it. So there's an element there that you can excuse a lot of the, I don't know, let's just have this kid join our friend group, because you're like, well, that's kind of the whole thing that's going on in this book, right? Is that we've got this sort of prophecy being fulfilled. I mean, it's not laid out quite like that. It's just sort of like they have this feeling of, you know, this is meant to happen, or as things are happening, they're like, this seems like it was meant to happen. I thought one of the interesting things that came out in the book versus movie discussion here, I mean, I wrote a whole column about it, so I'm not going to rehash that entire thing, but, you know, there's the scene that's commonly referred to as the sewer orgy, not entirely incorrectly, and I think I talked about that on a bonus podcast, and if you want to know how I feel about that scene, I mean, read the column I put on Lit Reactor. It's like, a lot of people read it. I think it's very even-handed and shit. And I think that the only things I would add that I didn't really put in the column, because I just didn't think it mattered that much, at the time of the writing of the column is stuff like, the kids having sex in the sewer is weird and uncomfortable. And I would say, A, that's something that does not translate to film, right? You just can't show that shit on film. You can describe it in a book. And I'll say this, like, the description of it in the book is basically the description that it's happening, but it is not salacious to my eyes. It's not sexy. I mean, there's sex happening, but occasionally you'll see something where someone's basically accusing Stephen King of being a pedophile, which I would, like, tooth and nail fight anybody who's saying that based on that scene, because I'm like, I don't know, man. I don't think that what you're seeing is what's there. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you're saying, oh, yeah, Stephen King is a pedophile because he wrote about kids having sex, and you're like, I don't think so. I mean, wouldn't that be like saying, oh, this police officer investigates crimes against children. They're involved in that world. I don't know. And it's certainly not selling. That scene doesn't sell itself on the sex element. Nobody's looking at that being like, that was a hot scene. Nobody is like, you know, shamefully 50 Shades of Greying that shit and being like, you know what, this is like total schlock, but pretty hot, pretty kind of a turn on. Nobody's like saying, my wife was reading that book and, you know, I didn't dig it. I thought it was kind of a stupid book, but, you know, turned her on. So I'm happy it was there. That's none of that's happening. Right. So I don't know. I just think that the whole thing is overblown. And that's a weird thing to say about a child sex scene, but there you go. I think it's overblown. I also think it's very convenient because you can pick it out. And this is something I didn't talk about in the column either. But, like, taking things from that book out of the context is probably one of the ultimate tests of whether or not you think context matters as an individual. And I know some people don't think things like context and intent matter. And I completely disagree with that. You know, if you can write over 1,000 pages in this book, It, and then have somebody pick out 5 pages and decide what the book is really about, or like, if you can pick out less than 1% of a material and then kind of say, well, here's what this book is, or like, here's what this book represents, I mean, that seems fucked up to me. I think that premise is kind of saying Stephen King did all this work basically to write this thing, and that is crazy. I mean, that's crazy. That's crazy. All right. So that's kind of the thing with that scene. That's Pete's take on the scene, which is like the take that says context matters, and If you didn't read the book, or you think the book is if you think that's what the book is, you're wrong. You know, fucking find out for yourself, be an adult. Okay. So here's where things get a little interesting, though, because obviously the movie is not going to go that way, right? And part of what I talked about in the column that I would emphasize here is that I don't think somebody could write it the same way, and they couldn't write the sex scene in there. But I don't think it's because it's kids having sex. I think you could do something like that. I think the reason you can't do it today is because the, you know, obvious critique of it today is going to be like, well, you have one female character, one female protagonist, really, and her only use is as a sex object, right? Like, her way of helping the group is as a sex object. So you couldn't do it today because basically no one would go for it. I think everyone would be like, no, fuck that. Now, so what they did instead in the movie is the female character was captured by Pennywise and then put in a trance and saved by the fat kid kissing her, you know, and wakes her up out of a trance. Which is pretty lame, right? I mean, I honestly thought, because, you know, I thought, like, a lot of the dialogue, the jokes in the movie were funny and stuff, and I kind of thought that, you know, he would kiss her, and that it wouldn't work, you know what I mean? That they'd be like, why would that work, you fucking idiot, you know? And he's like, I don't know, I just thought it was a thing. I thought, what do you do when there's a corpse floating and you're trying to revive it from a magic spell? I mean, we're in a pretty unusual situation here. One could excuse this kid for thinking that maybe that would be a solution. I can see where he was going in the story, but where the filmmakers were going is harder to see. But I think what the filmmakers were trying to do was to give this female character, Bev, more purpose in the movie. So here's something that's interesting, I think, about this whole thing. I've seen more than one person talk about this movie, and they're kind of incensed because there's a scene in the movie where all the kids go swimming in their underwear, and then they're sitting on, like, the beach, the shore by this, you know, quarry, whatever, and she's, like, laying there, and all the boys are staring at her. I think it's super weird that people are, like, so critical of that. Because it's like, yeah, is that necessarily how you would want young boys to behave? No. But, I mean, if you had a bunch of 12-year-old boys, and you had a 12-year-old girl there, and she was, like, laying out in her underwear, how shocking is it? Or wouldn't it be weirder if they were just like, no big deal? And let's be clear, this is occurring in, like, the early 80s, okay? This is not the current era of whatever. I mean, that it would be really unusual to see that happen, and I think that the boys' reaction to it is exactly how boys would react to it, which is basically just like, oh my god, can you believe they're gawking at her laying out in her underwear? Yes, I can. Like, yeah, that's pretty believable, to be honest with you. I mean, I might not like that. I might not like that that's how things are, but I think that is how it is. Honestly. But anyway, I think they were trying to, like, be realistic about the relationship between the kids, but also give Bev something to do, and I think having her be captured was their idea of giving her something to do, and I think it totally backfired. Because in the book, you know, one could argue about her being used only as a sex object, but the truth of the matter is, they have, like, a pistol, they try to make, like, a silver bullet and all this stuff, and she's the one who ends up shooting because she's, like, the best shot, and there's a couple other things she does that are more that the boys don't or can't or won't, right? So she does do that in the book, and, you know, there's lots of reasons for it and whatever, but she does other stuff too. And in the movie, I think she ends up being a little bit more of a victim than she does in the book, because something else I didn't argue in the column because I didn't feel like there was much point. But in the book, it's not like she's having sex with these boys against her will. And, you know, of course, the will and ideas of a 12-year-old are not good. I mean, like, we don't really trust their opinion on, like, oh, it's having sex with a bunch of boys is fine. You know, I'm 12. They're not equipped to make that decision, right? But what I'm saying is, it's not like a rape scene here. It's not like, you know, it's not like the group of bullies in the book finds her and then, like, rapes her or something like that. It's different. And so really, I mean, she's got agency. Let me just put it that way. In the book, she has some agency. And in the movie, she really doesn't have a lot of agency. Like, she doesn't do a whole lot. And in fact, I think she needs the boys a lot more than they need her in the movie. You know, there's the scene that's similar in the book and the movie where her bathroom, like, the sink erupts in blood and it's a bloody mess. And the adults can't see the blood, right? Only kids can see it. And so they go and they help her clean it in the book because they're like, she's their friend at that point, and they're like, well, she's got to keep using this bathroom, and it's just like a bloody, disgusting mess, right? And the same thing sort of happens in the book, but it doesn't make sense to me, because they're not, like, great friends at that point. And, I don't know, it's just like, it just felt very unnatural. It felt like this group of kids, I was like, they wouldn't clean something, you know what I mean? That would be crazy. So, I think it weirdly, they took away her agency and all that stuff, but I think something else that is sort of interesting about making a movie or a book or whatever today is that, you know, okay, you have a book like It, and you have a mostly male set of characters, and you have one girl. You make the movie, and you maintain that same ratio. And then, which, by the way, I'm like, you could have easily turned Stan into a girl. Why not? He's barely in the fucking movie anyway. And then just been like, oh, whatever, so brave. But if you're going to keep that same ratio, and you keep basically the same characters and all that stuff, but then you're not going to have them do the same things, that's like a real choice. And then I think that, like, something that's weird about today is that things are judged by their sort of, I don't know what to call this, but, like, political correctness, I guess. Or their, you know, when I was in college, right, the first 4 years of college, I got an English degree, and we would talk about books on this deep level, right? Like, okay, what would be the feminist critique of this? What would be the this critique of that? What would be that, right? But now, I think, really, it's sort of the feminist critique is the only one that matters. And by that, I mean, you know, what's the sexual interplay? Is there equality between male and female characters? And, you know, I'll throw race in there, too, because if we're calling feminist critique, it's critique of the equality level, right? And I think that, like, most things now are critiqued on that level, and then if they don't pass that critique, then they don't sort of move on to being critiqued otherwise. So I think it's a weird thing, because I think when the book came out, that wasn't really the case. And so what happens with the book is, because it happens so late, and because it's, you know, the weird part, but it's amongst a lot of other stuff that's not weird in the same way, I don't know. For a variety of reasons, you kind of have to make a choice in the book of, all right, this thing happens in the book, I'm reading this thing happening, does this outweigh for me the rest of the book? Like, basically, you can ask the question in, you know, when the book was published, I think it was like the late 70s, early 80s, you can ask the question of, is this book good enough to justify this one part that I hate and doesn't make sense? But I kind of feel like now, the movie, it's hard for people to look at it and say, well, did I like this movie enough to justify what I'm making as the critique of, well, she didn't really have any agency, she just kind of got kidnapped, right? Can I, do I still like it otherwise? I feel like a lot of folks just kind of look at something and they're like, well, if it doesn't pass that critique, it's bad. And if it does pass that critique, it's good. But I think some things are going to have bad politics and still be good. Anyway. But I mean, I guess it's just weird to me that you would change that aspect of this, but you would change it that way. Like, if you're going to change it and you're not going to have the sewer orgy, which I think was a good choice, and you're going to change, you know, Bev's character a little bit, why would you change it that way, though? Why would you change things to still be sort of objectionable in that way, but not gross or grotesque, just sort of, like, lazy? I mean, that's how it feels to me. It's not like I'm disgusted by, you know, Beverly didn't really have a lot of agency and kind of had to be rescued by the boys. I just feel like, I mean, if you were going to go through the work to change it, why not fucking change it and make it good? I don't know. Just basically, why not have one of the kids get kidnapped and then whatever? I will say that it was, she got rescued by the boys, and the kiss that brought her back to life was from, you know, the fat nerd. And so I thought that was kind of, I mean, that's a little different. But there you go. So in a way, the sexual politics of the movie are a little worse in my eyes, because honestly, at the time that was written and in the context of the book, the sexuality is a lot more grotesque. But this movie coming out in 2017 and like knowing what we do today and how things work today, like, they should know better, basically. I guess maybe I feel like if you're Stephen King and you're writing this book in a coke-fueled whatever in, you know, the 70s, and you put this out and you're like, here's what it is, whatever. But if you're making a major motion picture, you know, with the marketing and all the shit that this had, I feel like you should know better, maybe. Just a little. Let's talk about Pennywise. I thought that Pennywise had his moments of scariness in the movie. But overall, like, you know, I think the scariest things he did are, like, run around in sort of choppy CG sort of motion, creeping around, you know, quickly. But that is not, like, a new thing. I mean, if you watch any horror movies, like, basically that's how they film a lot of weird shit. You know what I mean? Like, they'll do these little tricks. Like, they'll film, you know, the girl in the ring, they'll film her walking backwards and then reverse the tape so that it's, like, it looks weird, right? And they'll do this weird choppy animation and speed them up and stuff like that. And I thought that, like, the end, they go down to Pennywise's lair and stuff, and it was really cool looking, and I thought that added a lot to it. But then he's, like, doing this little dance, and I was just like, this is not, is this supposed to be horrific? Is this, like, what is he doing right now? Like, why? It just felt like this was the moment in the horror movie where, you know, the James Bond villain is explaining to James Bond exactly how this is all going to work. That's what that felt like, but it was the horror movie version. He's like, well, I'm going to do this weird dance thing right now because this is a movie that people are watching. And, you know, we have to do... They're going to want to see a little more Pennywise. They're going to be like, I haven't seen a lot of this clown. I've been just hanging out with these kids all the time. I don't know. Fuck it. Another character that, like, no one really talked about in anything I saw, but that was really different was the bullies. Specifically, the one kid, Patrick. So Patrick is briefly in the movie. He chases... I think he thinks he's chasing a kid in the sewer or something, or he does, but then he gets, you know, caught by Pennywise. And I think what's really interesting is in the book, there's this kind of whole interlude with Patrick because he is like a true psychopath. I mean, it's frightening and it's really great because the book goes through his character and basically he thinks he's the only thing that's real. Like, he's the only real person in the world. And then he has a baby brother who he's threatened by because he's like, for whatever reason, his non-logic logic says his baby brother is also real. So now there are two real people in the world and he's one of them. And he kills the baby brother. And not only does he kill the baby brother, and it's like described very, you know, it's like a very cold description, very like mechanical. But then like, it's... laid out that the dad, you know, sees some, like, a boot print or something and sees some shit in the baby's bedroom that makes him pretty sure that Patrick was the one who did it, right? And, like, his parents kind of question him, but without questioning him. He's real fucked up. You know, he's got this refrigerator in the swamp that's full of dead animals. I mean, all this kind of shit, right? And he's a very disturbed individual. And, like, that section of the book is really good. And it was something that I don't think came through in the movie, which is, like, kind of part of the point here is that the entire town is fucked up by this whole evil. Because it's like, yeah, you've got shit like that going on, right? Like, people who are... the evil is sort of speaking to them in different ways. And you've got shit like... in the book, repeatedly what happens is, you know, a kid will be endangered. And adults will, like... come on the scene and then just sort of walk away in a daze, like they weren't seeing it. And it was really great. Like, I thought that was great because it kind of both, it makes the scariness scarier because you're like, nobody's coming to help you, kid who's getting, like, stabbed right now. But also, on the side of the road in the middle of the day. But it also, like, speaks to the overall theme that's in the book that I think was missed in both movies, which is, like, it's definitely a growing up, coming of age story. And when I say coming of age, I don't mean, like, you know, oh, the brave hero who has asthma overcomes his asthma and wins a karate tournament with Chuck Norris. See? Sidekicks. I mean a coming-of-age story in, like, it's realistic where as they separate and stuff like that, they completely forget their childhood. And, like, they're good, good friends when they get back together in Derry as adults. And as soon as they vanquish it, they all kind of forget who each other are. One of the adults dies down in the sewer, and they kind of forget his name. Like, they can't remember his last name. Two of them are talking on the phone, and they're just like, you know, we're just not clicking and stuff like that. And, you know, they probably won't talk together for a long time and whatever. And it's sort of, I think it's a very sweet and interesting version of the idea of, yeah, you have these, like, close, very intertwined friendships when you're a kid, and then as you become an adult, those, like, fade. And not for any particular reason, but then you just don't talk to those people anymore. And, like, the most important things in your life become completely something you never think about anymore. And that's how that feels. So that's something that I think happens in the book big time. I mean, the book is big time about that. I think that, like, a closer adaptation to the book, honestly, not in terms of events, but in terms of, like, feel, is Stand By Me, which is an adaptation of a different Stephen King thing, which is, like, they're going to see this body. But halfway through the movie, you don't even remember that's what they're doing. You know what I mean? You're just kind of like, this is boys out in the woods together, whatever. Anyway, that was, like, a big difference to me that I felt like that was a big miss, is that sort of feeling and that sort of idea, right? And then I think the other thing that I felt was that I've gotten real tired of movies using computer graphics the way they do. And I gather that this doesn't bother people the way it bothers me, but it bothers me. Because I'm kind of the opinion that, like, if you could use, like, a practical effect, you probably should, because it'll look way better. And if you want to know, like, the difference, watch Beetlejuice and then watch Tim Burton's Alice in Wonderland. And tell me which of those movies is, like, more visually interesting to you. So I felt like, you know, and this doesn't have as much of a comparison, right? So we're talking Pennywise. Visually, it's hard to compare because, you know, the movie has the visuals and the book really doesn't. But I just felt like the movie, the first iteration of Pennywise was pretty good, and, like, the guy who is Pennywise, his eyes are kind of drifting off in different directions. Like, it gives you this feeling that it's difficult for whatever Pennywise really is to hold this form. And, you know, like, he doesn't fully understand how fucking fucked up that looks, right? But then a lot of the other sequences, like he's, you know, the embodiment of this flute lady from a painting, and what else was there? When he's the leper, you know, stuff like that. I mean, it's what I call CGI jizz fest. It's probably not quite in there. It's just like every superhero movie lately, I'm like, does it end in a CGI jizz fest? And someone will be like, what does that mean? And I'm like, you know, like, you've got your hero or heroes, and they're basically cutting through an army of faceless, who gives a fuck things, you know, spaceships, monsters, whatever. And they're just, you know, everything's happening really fast. Everything is super CG. You don't really care about any of the individual things that are happening here. It's like just whatever. And it's like, yeah, they pretty much all end that way. This was like the indie version of that, I guess, which is like, it just seemed that there were a lot of things that were done CG that could have been done without. And I think that, like, one of the rules that this movie made me think with CG that works really well, I think subtractive computer graphics work really well. There's a scene where Ben is in the library basement and he's being chased by, like, a headless kid. And that works great. Because it's, it looks scary and it looks real, right? But I think that when you, so I think, like, basically you get a guy, you put a fucking green hood on him and you have him run around, and then you just take his head out later. I think that works great. But I think when you have an entire person who's CG, it just looks like CG to me. It doesn't look real. And that's what makes it less scary. And I think that's what made this Pennywise seem not as scary. Like, the overall look of him was great. But he was so CG heavy that, like, he didn't look real to me. He didn't, and I think that's part of what's necessary to make him scary, is he has to be real. Or, you know, that makes him a horror character, is like, well, yeah, he's real. I mean, you can touch him. He feels like you can't touch him. Like, at the end, they're kind of hitting him with bats and shit like that. And I was like, that even hitting him? Like, I can't tell. Like, why would you think that that would do anything? It's like trying to hit a ghost with a bat or something. But, I got off track a little bit. But, like, Patrick was an interesting character. And the other bully, I think Henry? I think that's his name. He was alright in the movie. But, like, in the book, you know, he basically goes crazy. And then, you know, we have an interlude where he's in an asylum, and, you know, he has voices. The moon talks to him and, like, guides him all the time. And, like, the moon, you know, helps him escape and, like, helps him do all this shit. And you're just like, it's really weird. Like, it's got a great voice to it where you're like, this does sound like the thoughts of somebody who's hearing voices in their head, you know, and, like, has accepted that that's part of their life, and that's kind of the outward signifier of where they're at mentally and emotionally. And it works great, and I felt that in the movie, maybe we'll get more of that when they're adults, but the bullies didn't feel like super threatening to me, even though it was weird that, you know, they're like cutting this kid with a knife, but they didn't feel, in the book, I got this idea that the bullies were kind of like, most of them were sort of unwitting participants, right? You have this, like, I don't know, 3 or 4 person group of bullies. And, you know, it seems like they kind of just like picking on these kids and whatever, and they're dicks. But then at the point where, like, you know, this kid is cutting another kid, the other bullies are like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, this is way more than we signed up for. Like, we're not stabbing people and stuff like that. We're not interested in that. And they kind of drift away, and that's when the Patrick kid kind of joins in the group, and, it, you know, it's like a signifier of, like, he's going too far and whatever. So I don't know. There's just, like, a lot more character stuff. And I felt like all the character stuff was not in the movie. I, frankly, seeing the movie, I really want to talk to someone who saw it who didn't read the book, because I'm like, did it make sense to you? Like, did it follow? Like, did you get why they were suddenly friends with this kid? I mean, what the fuck? So overall, I guess, I think it was like a good movie, but I also think that people wanted it to be good so badly, and like wanted, I think the idea of the scary clown is like a real big thing. I think it had some great visuals, and I think that the parts where the movie was the best was where it completely deviated from the book, where it wasn't worried about, like, what the book was doing and was trying to sort of capture the spirit of the book without doing exactly what the book did. For example, the scene where they're doing the slideshow in the garage is a pretty, like, you know, pretty adapted version of a part where two of the kids are looking through a photo album, and it's like, okay, this makes a lot of sense. Like, they put it in the movie, but they turned it into a slideshow because that's way better visually, right? as a viewer, you're like, all right, I can get behind this. And it was good. It was scary, and then he's giant in the room and all that stuff, and that was good. But it's the parts where they kind of try and do what the book did a little too hard, I think, where it falls a little flat. Because I think that in trying to do what the book did, they just weren't as successful as they were when they were trying to do their own thing. That's how I feel about it. And so I think that also I didn't like it as much, but, you know, I had read the book a month before. I mean, I finished it for book club in September. So obviously it's fresh in my mind and I really enjoyed the book. And so the odds of me enjoying that as well are going to be low, right? It's just not going to happen.
So there you go. I mean, I don't know how spooky that is, but
it's a horror related topic. But I'd say this, I mean, I think that like, the final thing I would say is that I think Stephen King has got to be one of the most underrated writers, like, living and working right now. And not because he's underrated, like, not because he's unknown, but because he's way better at writing than people give him credit for. I mean, he's had some stupid ideas, and I think his ideas are especially stupid, you know, when they're committed to film. Like, that just doesn't seem to work very well for him. But despite all that, I think that, you know, at this point I've read It. I've read The Long Walk, which is great. Thinner, The Running Man, something else. And they're all great. Like, they're all so readable and so good. And, I don't know. I think that we can all give a little bit more credit to Stephen King. And, you know, we could all say, like, you know what? This movie was good, but the book's still fucking better. It really is. Even though it takes way longer, it's way better. But I think there's something to be said for that, too. Like, I think part of the experience of a book that's not replicable in a movie is, like, you read a book. And you know, it's like a 1,200-page book, right? So most people, it's probably going to take them, like, at least a month to get through something like that. And I think that there's something to be said for the fact that when you have a long-ass book like that, you're living in that world for a really long time. On and off, right? Not all straight through, but, like, you read it, and you're reading it for, you know, an hour. And then you put it down, and then you don't read it for 2 days, and then you're back in it, and you're in and out. And I think sort of being in and out of that world is a really effective way to tell a horror story. Because you start thinking about it, you find yourself thinking about it during the day, or, you know, just whenever. And so I think that that's something that is hard for movies to replicate. Like, you know, movies, we talk about, like, oh, I was thinking about it even the next day, right? But were you thinking about it over the course of a month? I mean, were you still absorbing it over the course of the month? And kind of at your own pace, right? The movie kind of happens as fast as it happens. A book is like, well, you kind of set the tone of how fast it's going to go. So I think that's another example of what I'm talking about as far as sometimes we compare books to movies, and, like, I think what we're forgetting to compare is just that the experience of something like It, a 1,200-page book, isn't something that's likely to be successful on film. Like, it's not likely that it's something that's going to be committed to film and leave people feeling like it was faithful. Because I don't think that's something you can faithfully do. Like, the closest you can get is probably fucking The Hobbit, right? In terms of, well, it probably takes about as long to read that book as it does to watch those movies. But even then, I think that that's like an example of as close as it gets. And in that example, I'm like, I don't know, man. I think you're better off with the book because the book feels pretty fast-paced and there's not a lot of filler in the movies, not so much. So I guess that's the terrifying fact of that I feel that books and movies, you know what I think it is? I think it's like, it's cool. Like, people should adapt stuff, and I think there are a lot of interesting stories and books that can be well adapted. I also kind of think that, like, maybe comparing the adaptations is a waste of our time. Because if something was meant to be a book and that's its purpose, then what? Why are we surprised when it's better as a book? I mean, why am I surprised? I don't know. I don't know why we do it. I don't understand why we do it, but we do. All right, well, that's probably enough of that, right? Book-to-movie comparison. I know that's really exciting. Tune in tomorrow. I think it'll be tomorrow. We have an exciting, exciting show. Pete read the script for Beetlejuice 2, a proposed alleged script. And what are his thoughts? Beetlejuice being one of my favorite Halloween time movies. What did I think of the Beetlejuice 2? Was it a movie that could have been wonderful, that should have been made? Is it a godsend that it didn't get made? Where does it fall? Find out tomorrow on this.